Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Faith-Focused Discipleship Podcast. My name is Kevin Rognes, and I'm the Discipleship Director here at Faith Covenant Church. Thank you for watching or listening, and remember to subscribe to make sure you don't miss anything, and also leave a comment to let us know how we're doing. And then if you want to have us cover any special topics or have any questions that you want us to address, my email address is listed in the show notes, so please make use of that. I would love to have a dialogue with you, even if it's just me engaging in a subject that you bring up, whatever that may be. So today, I am joined by Pastor Shar Rotfold. Thanks for coming.
Yep, you bet.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. We're tackling some heavier stuff today, and this is something that's popped up in my life with a friend of mine recently. And I kind of realized I am deeply under-equipped to deal with some of these things. And so I thought, you know, Shar, this might be good to bring up some of these subjects because these are things that happen a lot.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about today is domestic abuse and domestic violence, which takes a lot of form, so we're going to get into that.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes this is just something that you never really learn about until someone is going through it, whether it's yourself or someone you love and care about mm-hmm. that's close to you. Maybe it's a coworker or a friend or a fellow parent of your kid at school. It's just something that doesn't really get talked about until it's happening.
Yeah.
And then people are like, whoa, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
So we want to kind of hopefully get a few of you kind of ahead of the curve a little bit in kind of recognizing what some of these things are and just giving you a little bit of information about resources so that people have a starting point. This is not going to be an exhaustive thing where we explore all of this. This is really just very surface level just to kind of give you some ideas of where to start. So with that said, so what is domestic abuse? We hear a lot of things about like it's domestic violence or it's abuse or it's financial, it's mental, emotional. Talk us through some of what this can be.
Yeah. And a quick word, if you've got young ones in the area right now, please be mindful. This might be a tough, there might be some words here that will be tough that you need to know are coming. So this is a PG-13 plus probably conversation. And if you deem that it's appropriate for younger ones to listen to at a later date, you can make that decision. But yeah, domestic abuse and violence are two different things. I think sometimes people don't realize that, but, and it's, you mentioned financial and, physical and, spiritual, sexual abuse, what other kinds, mental, emotional. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different forms of abuse or violence. So violence would be of the physical nature, physical or sexual abuse would be violence, but doesn't have to be. You can be abused physically and sexually without violence also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it would be fair to say that like domestic abuse is a bigger umbrella that covers things like domestic violence?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I would say domestic violence is always abuse, but domestic abuse is not always
violence.
Include violence,
So yeah, so somebody, so financial abuse could be a spouse withholding money or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I would say control and fear are the two big words to look out for. If you're wondering if there's abuse involved, if you feel like you don't have any control of your finances, you have to check with somebody before you spend anything, or you have to apologize or defend any purchases or any financial decisions you want to make. That's a sign. If you don't have control over your body, if you feel like you have to guard your words when you're with someone, well, that's a sign of your words. You don't feel safe, or you feel controlled with your words, or you're afraid. It's that fear and that control piece, I think, are the two biggest red flags there, if you're wondering.
Yeah. And sometimes people, it's hard to recognize when they're in the situation. What are some of the reasons that people don't always recognize it when it's happening to them?
That's a good question. It varies obviously from person to person, but sometimes it's you've heard the phrase or the scenario where if you put a frog in a pot of water, and then this is true, and you heat the water up slowly, the frog will boil to death basically and not jump out of the water. But if you have a pot of boiling water and you drop the frog in, the frog will hop out and not die. So it's that kind of scenario. If you're in a relationship, it doesn't have to be a marriage. It can be a friend. It can be, you know, a friendship or relationship of some sort. And over time, things can move a little bit more towards a controlling end, and you might not even realize it. Or so that's one scenario. Some people also, this is I think, rare, but it does happen where some people think, well, and it's more stereotypical, but it's more a woman thinking, well, when I'm married, then my husband is the head of my household and he gets to make all these decisions for me. And you can take verses of scripture out of context
and twist them
And use them against somebody. And that's that spiritual abuse, but you can use that for physical abuse and sexual abuse and financial abuse. You can misuse God's word. And then people will think, well, gosh, this must be how it should go. This is what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. Well, no.
No.
This is where you need to know the whole arc, the whole narrative of scripture, and not verses pulled out of context. Yeah. Really important.
And as you're talking too, we should clarify that domestic abuse can happen in a variety of kinds of relationships.
Yeah.
It's often happening in the context of a marital relationship or a dating relationship.
Yeah.
But it can also be parent to the child.
Yeah.
It can be child to a parent in elder years in particular.
Yeah.
Elder abuse in some cases. It can be in friendship situations. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of context where this can unfold.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So that's... Yeah, it can be harder to spot in some of those certain circumstances, especially with kids. You know, kids run around, they bump things, so you see bruises, and you're like, what's that? You know, because kids get bruises really easily, you know, and that can be very innocent, but it can also raise a red flag every now and then.
Yeah, for sure. I want to name one verse that can be taken out of context and can be used to cover a whole lot of things. It's 1 John 4:18 that says, there is no fear in love. Remember that one? There is no fear in love. You hear people talk about the fear of the Lord, and that, in that sense, the fear of the Lord means awe and respect and reverence. God is holy, and what God says, we heed, because God is God. But in a friendship or a relationship of any sort, if there's love there, there shouldn't be fear.
Yeah.
You shouldn't fear bringing a topic up. You shouldn't fear having a hard conversation. You shouldn't fear doing something wrong.
Yeah.
We're gonna make mistakes. You know, we're gonna make foolish financial decisions sometimes, and you shouldn't fear sharing that with somebody. You have the right to be human. You have the right to be imperfect.
So we already kind of mentioned a couple signs, but what are some of the signs to look for, whether it's a situation that you yourself are in or a loved one? Like we mentioned, that fear and control aspect. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other warning signs of abuse or violence to look for?
I think if someone like pulls back in themselves, if you see them if they behave differently by themselves than with the person that is an abuser, potentially, that's one thing. If they become a different person, or they withdraw into themselves, or they don't speak in the presence of someone, or they defer to the other person or let them answer for them, that's a sign right there.
If you're noticing that behavior in yourself, if you're noticing you're changing your behavior when you're not with the person who may be abusing you, that's a thing to look for.
Right. Or your really chatty friend, when you go out, just the two of you, maybe your significant others are involved, or you have dinner with more than just the two of you, and you notice that your friend is real quiet and doesn't say a whole lot, or might look at the other person before speaking. Well, that's something. That's something to pay attention to.
Other things that I've learned about in this situation with a friend of mine recently is what stories they tell about their significant other. So, like, for example, my friend was sharing that their spouse did not want them to be there at this gathering. Their spouse was upset that she was not at home that night.
Yeah.
And was going out with other people.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a red flag there. It was kind of the first red flag that I saw before I learned a bunch of things.
But,
that's kind of, again, that control piece.
Yeah. And that usually takes a bit of time to discern, because we do defer to one another. When you're in a relationship, you do defer to the other, and we do put our own needs second sometimes for the sake of the relationship, but not all the time. That should be on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another thing, especially with the violence piece, what do you do if you see unexplained bruises or other markings of possible injury?
Yeah. And normal question would be to ask, oh, that looks like you hurt yourself, or you fell down or something, whatever. And then And you can say that innocently. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the first time it is an innocent thing, and then the person might feel nervous or be evasive about the bruise. But if you notice repeated times with repeated evasion mm-hmm. or discomfort, that would be a red flag too. Because it's a normal thing to, you look at a kid and you're like, oh, it looks like you fell down and skinned your knee. You know,
I just did it with my nephew a few minutes ago. Yeah. Yeah. He had like a little, like his eyebrow looked a little red. I was like, oh, what was that? You know?
Yeah. And if the kid responds, yeah, oh, I fell on this or I did this or whatever, then that's fine. But often the kid will hesitate, or if mom or dad are present, they might get nervous and not want to speak and look to mom and dad to mm-hmm. give the answer.
Yeah.
Again, over time, patterns
yeah.
kind of emerge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really hard with kids because, I mean, they'll say what they're told to say. A lot of it depends on how much relationship you have. With some people, you know what their tell is if they're being lying or truthful. Do you have any more guidance on how to discern that, especially with kids?
Yeah, it's always tough, but they do say that kids don't lie as well as parents do.
Yeah.
So if you get a kid to look you in the eye, you can often tell. Like, kids will tell the truth. I did some training in this years ago in domestic abuse and violence, and if a child's being physically or sexually abused, they will not lie about. They won't tell you that that is happening if it's not happening. Is the general rule of thumb. I'm sure there are exceptions, but if you ask a direct question, I think we're afraid to ask direct questions because we don't want to. And you do have to be careful about this with kids.
Yes.
But with adults in particular, this is probably where we're talking more older kids or adults. Ask the direct question. Don't be afraid. It's like a suicide. If you're afraid that someone is considering taking their life, you ask them.
Mm-hmm.
You look them in the eye. Are you thinking about harming yourself?
Yeah.
Are you thinking about ending your life? You look them in the eye, you ask the direct question, and then you watch the response. But we're so afraid sometimes, oh, it's none of my business. I don't want to overstep. I don't want to ask that and put thoughts in their head.
Yeah.
But an adult doesn't, you ask the direct question.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a relief that they, somebody sees me.
Well, and you can also say, I might be misreading things, but...
Yeah.
Are you thinking of harming yourself? Mm-hmm. Or I might be misreading things, but has someone hurt you?
Yeah.
You know, and that gives them the space to see, that just helps them see that you're concerned and that you're not jumping to conclusions, but you're asking that directly.
Yep. Our son split his head open being swung by our husband on a playground, and he was little and he just was swinging and he hit his head on the playground system and had to get a couple staples in, and the doctor pulled me aside and asked me about that. Mm-hmm. And I was able to say, no, I was watching the whole thing. They were playing. It was fine. But I was really glad that the doctor took the time to pull me aside and ask me that question. Yeah. I'm glad for that.
And that's maybe something, too, that's key is try to talk to this person in private.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, because A, they may need to be away from a person who's maybe doing some of this, but B, they may need just the security of a private conversation to do that. So if you're thinking you may need to have a conversation with some of these difficult questions, it may be hard to find a private venue possibly or a place to meet where you can have some more private conversations, but try to do that if you can.
Right. Because sometimes phones can be monitored and bugged and tracked by an abuser too.
Or text, like with the friend that I'm currently helping, it like their spouse was monitoring everything.
Yeah. Which brings up another point. This might be jumping ahead a little bit, but it's really important for someone who's being abused. They need to have, I'm talking more about an adult here. I'm talking about an adult. They need to have control over the decisions that they're going to make in their scenario. And we talked about this before, like everything in me wants to say, you need to do this. I think you should do this. And here's what I think your next step ought to be. But that's not what we are supposed to do. We are not supposed to get in the spot of telling a friend what to do, because that can come back at the person and it can come back at us. So a really helpful thing is, what are your options right now? what are your resources, and go over resources and options, and then the individual gets to make the decision. Mm-hmm. And you can say, well, what do you think might happen if you did this, or what might result from this decision, and kind of process with them that way. But then they need to make the decision. They say it takes a woman who's being abused, because most often that's the case, not always, for
statistically
sure.
Speaking,
but statistically,
that's
more
scenario.
More common women. It takes a woman on average 8 times before she leaves her abuser. Mm. That's because love gets mixed up in this, and there are feelings.
Yeah.
There are. It's not like you go from love to hate. There have been good times, and there are good times. Mm-hmm. Still, it's not. Usually, it's not 100% bad times. So yeah. It gets confused, and I made a promise, or I'm, you know, committed in this relationship.
And there's sometimes kids involved,
yeah.
And that's a difficult dynamic to work
through.
Yeah.
So it's really painful to watch someone go back and return to an abuser and continue to be abused. And that, unfortunately, happens fairly often.
Yeah.
But we can't solve it.
Yeah.
And fix it for somebody else.
Is part of the reason that it's not advisable to say, I recommend do this next, is part of that because oftentimes the victim or survivor has been so controlled and it's trying to give back agency to them? Is that a part of it? Like, you don't want to create a new situation where they just step into being controlled by someone else again.
Right.
Is that
what
that is?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure, yeah. And it's helpful for someone, and this is kind of what you're saying too, if you don't feel like you've been able to make decisions, then if you do make a decision and it comes back to haunt you, well, then that's going to be like, oh, okay, I'm done making decisions. Or listening to somebody else, I'm just doing what so-and-so told me. Well, then that can endanger yourself and cause further social withdrawal with the person. It gets really messy. It gets really sticky, yeah. Yeah.
So then if anybody listening is being abused themselves, and this is specifically for people who are experiencing that and not for somebody who's helping, we'll get to that a little bit more, but what are some first steps to take? Like, what resources are available? How do you access some of those resources?
Yeah.
Let's start there and kind of what are some first steps to take if you're experiencing that?
I would say, well, a 911 call is... At the extreme, if there's physical or sexual abuse over you or a child in your life, you call 911. You just do that for safety. But if it's not that like extreme, like you're afraid for your life at the present, be sure you know who your 3 a.m. friends are. And you know, I say that in quotes, but name people in your life that are safe people that you trust. And know who they are and know how to get a hold of them, and call them. Mm-hmm. Call them and have a face-to-face with them, or if you feel safe talking on the phone, call them on the phone or meet them somewhere. But find a safe person or have a few of them in case one's not available. Have 1 to 3 at the ready that you know they will pick up. They will be there. They will make time for you. They'll prioritize a hard conversation with you, and then reach out to one of them. That would be a first step to bounce things off of and just share with.
Yeah.
So that would be a first step. 911, obviously, for some scenarios is a first step. Your pastor. Pastors don't all go through training on how to handle abuse, but we do know how to have confidential conversations. And a word about confidentiality too, that there are two things that negate a confidential conversation is if you tell me you're going to hurt yourself or someone else, or if you're being hurt and you're afraid for your safety or that of your kids, then confidentiality is no longer fits.
And that's where the phrase mandated reporter comes in.
Yep.
So if clergy or like a teacher, psychologist, therapist, if they hear of harm being done, that's when that confidentiality is negated.
Yep. Yeah, or fear of harm being done. So if it's a child, a school counselor or a school psychologist would be a good resource. And then you also have some other, and I wrote these down, a counselor / therapist you could talk to also. So if you want to talk to somebody you don't know at all, you can Google online or call your pastor or call somebody you know and ask for a referral for a counselor or a therapist. Anybody here on staff at Faith has, we have names that we can refer to you to. So please call us if you don't want to talk to us because we know you a bit. That's fine. We'll give you a name. You don't even need to know, need to tell us why you want to talk to somebody. We'll just give you a name and contact info, and that would be a good resource too. But there are, if you want to grab a pen at this moment, I'm going to give you a phone number and a place to text. If you text the word BEGIN in all caps, BEGIN, BEGIN, to the number 88788, that will start a texting conversation with a trained therapist who's trained to talk to you about domestic abuse or violence. And there's an 800 number too. It's the National Domestic Abuse Hotline, and it's 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E, which is 800-799-7233, which again is SAFE. So you can call that number, and it's answered 24/7. So there's a couple other, if you want to be completely anonymous and immediate, you want some immediate someone to talk to, those are a couple of numbers for you too.
Yeah. And then with that, just a reminder that if the person who's maybe abusing you has access to your phone, just be advised, maybe you use a friend's phone to initiate that if you don't have a secure, safe line. So just be aware of that as well.
Because
I've seen that happen where the other partner has full access and you may not be ready for them to see that. Not to strike more fear in. Like, these are vital resources to be able to have.
And if you're wondering if a friend is being abused and you ask them, don't be alarmed or surprised if their response is one of denial or defense. That could be, if this is the first time this has been brought up, it could be, no, I'm fine. We're fine. Everything's cool. But
there's a level of denial there that's possible.
But you're at least, you're getting the thought in, like, I see you, which is what you want to tell your friend. I see you and I care for you and I love you. And
something looks unhealthy here.
And if it's not, my bad, I apologize, but
it's better to err on the side of caution and having the conversation. And if you're in a situation of abuse, when do you know that it's time to leave? Because I know a lot of people have struggled with that question. Obviously, there's issues of safety. If you're not safe, get out. But if there's not, like, imminent physical danger or sexual danger, what are the points where people, and that's maybe not an answerable question, but, like, I know some people have wondered, when do I leave? When do I call this abuse, and when do I leave?
Right.
Because especially with a lot of religious contexts, divorce is, you know, viewed very negatively, but when is abuse, meaning that that's maybe a next step to consider?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I remember clearly a mentor saying to me, maybe 20-ish years ago, said for the first time as a pastor, and he said, there are times when divorce is the best option.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? You know, like, it just, to hear that said real clearly, like, I would recommend divorce in these scenarios. I was like, oh my. But God wants, so in marriage, yes, biblical marriage is designed between a man and a woman, and it's designed to last for life till death do you part. However, the reality is we are fallen human beings and we're not always healthy. So if you, ideally, two wholes come together and make a whole. You know, there's this phrase that kids sometimes think, oh, two halves make a whole. You and I complete each other. And it's this beautiful, you know, I'm a half a thing and you're a half a thing. We come together, we make a whole thing. Well, that doesn't make for a healthy marriage. You can't rely on somebody else to fill what you don't feel like you have. Two whole people coming together out of choice and choosing to walk together is what makes a solid marriage, a solid, healthy marriage with the Lord, obviously. But sometimes somebody will, I'm getting myself off track here a little bit. Sometimes not everybody is whole and someone is damaging to the other one. And they're, if you're not able to grow and able to mature and able to live the life that God has called you to live and designed you to live, and you can't, you're with someone who doesn't love you and is pulling you and holding you down and destroying you emotionally, that's not a marriage. That's not a healthy marriage. So if two wholes can't be wholes, and if you're not equal partners, different but equal in the eyes of God and in the eyes of one another, that's not a godly marriage. That's not a biblical marriage. And it's not good for either one of you, especially if there are kids involved. It's terrible for kids to see, to grow up in that, thinking that that's a normal way to live and to be married. So if you don't feel like you have the right to be who God made you to be and to live a full, whole life, that's, and if you've tried, if you've gone to counseling and if you've tried some things and it's just not, you're not seeing any change, well, that's a sign.
And another way of phrasing it, like sometimes people, it's kind of often assumed in many church circles that the only grounds for divorce is infidelity. Some people define that only as sexual unfaithfulness or infidelity, but abuse is a form of that.
Yeah.
Because a person has sworn to love someone.
Yeah.
If they're abusing, controlling, manipulating, that's a form of infidelity. That's unfaithfulness to the marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the line in scripture that gets taken out of context too, where husbands love your wives as Christ loved the church, and women, wives submit to your husbands. Sometimes the wives submit to your husbands gets pulled out and says, your husband is in charge of every part of your life.
Yeah.
Well, how about the first part of that? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. If my husband is loving me like Jesus loves me, why would I not submit?
Yeah.
And I mean,
well, and Jesus loved by submitting himself
and by to death serving. On a cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there, it's a what the Bible depicts is very much a mutual submission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life. And that is how the husband is supposed to love the wife.
Yeah.
And that is how the wife is also supposed to love the husband. So, yeah. Yeah. It gets messy.
Quickly.
Sometimes, but there's also hope for healing. So, you can be in a really unhealthy marriage and you can separate for a time even. And if you both are committed to doing work and like work with a counselor or therapist separately and together as a couple, I'm talking just about marriage here.
Yeah.
There's hope for healing. God can work any kind of miracle. Nothing is too great for God to redeem. So
If both parties want to,
yeah. And that's that piece of one, if one is willing to do work and the other isn't, then that's grounds for a different conversation. And there's a great book along that called, it's by Gary Chapman. It's about separation. Anyway, there's a great book there on how to separate in a constructive way, moving towards reconciliation, but that's another topic for another day. Yeah. Oh.
So if you're caring for a friend or a relative, coworker, if you suspect abuse in someone else's situation, what should we do? Obviously, there's the first piece that we've kind of talked about is just have that direct conversation. That's maybe the first step, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe even a first step before that would maybe be do like a little bit of research. Like, what did I just, like, just Google a couple things and just say, I saw this happening. Is that a red flag? Like, you know, maybe Google red flags of abuse or something. But if you suspect abuse in another person's situation, whether it's a child or an adult, what are some things to do?
Yeah. Well, that I would say pray and have a conversation in that order would be the first step for sure. And your friend might say, nope, everything's good. And then you need to let it go for a while. But if you're still seeing a habit of things, say, yeah, I know we talked about this. I'm just struggling with this right now. I'm concerned. Yeah. And don't push your way in or don't force your way in. But you can acknowledge what you see. Kind of like you do when there's some of this is like AA stuff, Al-Anon stuff. If you have someone who's abusing a substance in your life, you can say, well, this is how your alcohol has affected my life. You can also say, well, this is what I see. This is my experience when I watch this and use it from your standpoint. I'm affected when this happens. And that can be a step. You can also call that hotline and or do the texting conversation that I gave earlier, and say I'm concerned about a friend, mm-hmm. and they can walk you through some things too. Oh,
that's good.
So you have some resources, yeah, because you don't want to underreact or overreact. You want to appropriately react. But if there's a continuum, underreacting, overreacting, I would say be more towards the over. But yeah. you don't need to like. You hear a guy get mad at his wife once and you call the police. I mean, that's an overreaction, yeah. you know? So there's a continuum there, and you don't want to jump to from A to Z immediately. You want to give it some time and consistent behavior over time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everybody in a relationship goes through hard times sometimes.
Yeah.
So we all snap sometimes in public, mm-hmm. Usually not, but just snapping that happens sometimes, and yeah. you just know
and
that
raised
that happens.
Voices.
And raised voices
is not automatically abuse.
Right, right. Kids get mad at their parents. Some kids, I mean, we spanked our parents a bit when they were little. Not our parents.
Backtrack.
Our children, and in a way that's not corporal punishment and is appropriate and whatever. Yeah. But so there are different ways of parenting and different ways of doing that too. Yeah. So
yeah.
It's tricky.
So if you're observing a situation and you're concerned, we've kind of gotten close to this line too, but at what point do you maybe report to the authorities, where you like report to CPS or call the police? Certainly if you expect or suspect imminent physical or sexual danger,
yeah,
make that call. If you're thinking that there is about to be violence,
yep,
certainly
yep.
make that call.
Yeah.
But, is there other guidance that you would say about reporting to authorities of some sort?
Yeah, if your neighbor, for example, if you're hearing screaming from a house and you're hearing kids screaming and parents yelling, you know, even in one time, depending on how severe it is, you can call.
Yeah.
You can call that and say, it does not sound healthy at my neighbor's house. I'm afraid for their kids. Or I've heard this 3 times now, and I'm concerned. And they can do
this
a
sounds more
welfare
than just yelling
check.
At TV during a football game.
Yeah, yeah. And they can do a welfare check then. Yeah, repeated bruises, that kind of thing. You can bring it up anonymously and get some suggestions for yourself, but also alert somebody and get some advice from them. If you're afraid of harm that's imminent, call 911 mm-hmm. and see what they say, or yeah. call this number and see what they say.
Because
yeah.
if you're the person calling 911, that's not necessarily going to blow back on your friend who's maybe being abused or your neighbor,
right,
or whomever,
right.
because they're not the one who called.
Yeah.
You did. Let them be mad at you, not the people involved.
Yeah, yeah. Some of us are mandated reporters. Kevin mm-hmm. and I are mandated reporters. A lot of your teachers are mandated reporters.
Therapists
are mandated reporters. Pastors are mandated reporters. There's a lot of people who are mandated reporters who will make a call mm-hmm. if there's a suspect. But you can't call me or Kevin and say, hey, I think my neighbor something. Will you call 911? Well, I don't have any firsthand information.
Right.
Yeah.
And just so you know, too, you can, if you're in a situation where you report to a pastor or a therapist and you're talking to them, having a conversation you've shared with them, if you're concerned that they may report, just ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Just say, I know I've shared a lot right now. I am afraid. Are you going to report this? And we'll honestly say, yes, this may cross the threshold of what I need to report.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just ask that question. If you're in a situation where you've shared and you're concerned or wondering if they're going to report.
Yeah, yeah. Or let's make the call together, or mm-hmm. I'll sit here with you and we can, you know, call the hotline number or call 911 or do something, and I'll be here with you and I'll be praying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are difficult things, because I know that there may be concern of retaliation.
Yeah.
But sometimes, well, I won't go there. That's a different story.
Yeah. So here's another thing. If you have a friend who's, I had this happen just a couple weeks ago, actually. So if somebody tells you that they're being abused and they need to leave and they are choosing, like they want to leave, it's time. Good questions to ask without telling them what to do. Do you have a place to stay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a safe place to be tonight? We're not talking about the next 6 months, but do you have a place to be tonight? Do you have any financial, do you have any money available to you right now? Do you know where your next meal is going to come from? Ask some of those questions to get some of those things thinking, and then you can provide resources depending on how the answers are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have lists of places that people can go to for food assistance, for financial assistance, mm-hmm. legal assistance.
Shelters.
Yep. So we know of institutions that are designed to help with these kinds of situations. So
yeah.
You don't have to know what those are off the top of your head. Let us know. Yeah. We can start connecting you with those either for yourself or for someone that you're caring for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we've covered those questions. What if, so, and we've kind of started to go towards this, and we've kind of answered this, but I want to ask it a little bit more directly. What if someone is not ready to confront the abuse that they seem to be experiencing? Like, if I'm seeing repeated bruises in the same locations and hearing different red flags of them being controlled in some way, but they're making excuses. Well, I got to stay here for the kids, or it's not that bad. Like, I've heard a variety of different rationalizations mm-hmm. for why a person stays. What do we do if this person that we're caring for isn't ready to confront the abuse?
Yeah. Well, our heart breaks a little.
A lot.
Or a lot.
Yeah.
But we let them know that, like, I'm one of your 3 a.m. friends. Mm-hmm. I'm have seen this, and I'm concerned about this, and I'll be praying for you. For sure, I'm available to you. I mean, you set your own boundaries depending on the nature of your relationship and whatnot, but set your boundaries. But, you know, I'm available to you if you need someone to talk to or whatnot. Give them a phone number. Give them a number to text. Give them resources so that when they're ready, they have a number to call. And get some things, you know, be thinking about where you might go. Be thinking about, do you have any money available to you? Be thinking about who you can call and where you can stay and that kind of thing. And when they're ready. Yeah.
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 One thing that I've been kind of thinking through as I've been helping through someone through a situation like this is the problem is this big and I can only help with this much.
Yeah.
And that, it can be both, that knowledge can be both frustrating and peaceful, because when I remind myself that I can only help with this much of it, I have a lot of peace because I'm like, I'm doing this much of it. I'm doing what I can.
Yeah.
I can have peace that I'm doing what I can.
Right.
The problem is still this big. And so there can be a lack of peace in knowing that. Like, mm-hmm. we often just want to fix these problems and we want it to go away quickly. But if you just kind of remind yourself, I can do this much towards a solution for this problem, mm-hmm. I think that goes a long way in kind of dealing with this, especially if they're not ready to confront yet.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing your piece that you can do.
Yeah.
The problem may be much bigger than what you can solve, and you can't do it for them. There's a lot of agency that they have to reclaim and decisions they have to make for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really, really hard to watch.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true, yeah.
Yeah.
But one thing we can do, and we will do, is remind anyone who comes to us of where their value lies, who mm-hmm. they are, what is true about them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a sheet of paper. It's filled on both front and back with Bible verses about that are true of you.
Mm-hmm.
Verses out of context, but verses that are true. Like, you are fearfully and wonderfully made.
Mm-hmm.
God delights in you. God sings over you. You are precious in God's sight. So all these things are just true. Like, you are worthy. Because sometimes people just who are being abused have been knocked down so much they don't feel like they deserve any more or any better. And sometimes that can be a cyclical thing. Well, this is how my mom and dad were. This is how my grandparents were. And this, I don't deserve any better than this. But reminding them of what is true and that there's God sees you differently and there is great value in you and you deserve to be treated like a princess. Or a prince, because your father is the King of Kings, and reminding people of who they are and where their value lies.
I want to be treated like a princess. Sure. No, I don't. Sorry, I just.
Yeah.
And I would also just add that if you are helping someone through something like this, it's really hard, and it's going to be hard on you as well. So if you're helping someone through something like this, make sure you're taking care of yourself too. Yeah. Making sure that you're getting the rest that you need. Make sure you're getting the support that you need. Sometimes that means talking to people who are completely outside the situation, not in a way that violates the confidentiality of the person that you're helping. And maybe not even about that situation. Just go have coffee and talk about something else. But just make sure that you are being filled so that you can pour out for this other person. It's a hard thing to support someone through.
That's a very good point.
And the last question I had, I think we've already kind of answered this in many ways, but again, it's just maybe helpful to kind of specifically say it. How can we at Faith Covenant be of service to anybody who is helping someone through an abuse situation or being abused? Certainly, we've talked about how we're glad to sit alongside people in either circumstance of being abused or helping. We have resources that we can connect to. We can pray with you. Is there anything else that we need to add to that? Of what we can do at Faith to support people.
The only other thing I would add is in the bathrooms, there are brochures in the bathrooms. So there's a group of people in the Covenant that went through training called AVA, Advocacy for Victims of Domestic Abuse or Violence. And so there are resources, there are people trained in the Covenant. I went through that two different times, a long time ago now, and they've revamped it, and they now call it Safe Sanctuaries. I mean, I've not gone through that recent training, but there are brochures that organization puts out, that part of the Covenant, that are in the bathrooms at our church. And you grab one, and there's information like signs, what to look for, what to notice, I wonder about this, and then there are contact info on those two that are outside of our church. So you know that the staff here in the church, but also these brochures in the bathrooms that I do restock them, so people do take them. But there's resources on there too, and more general information that you can even grab one of those and hand it to a person and say, "Hey, I was reading through this the other day, and a few of these seem like they might fit. Forgive me if this is a bit much, but maybe you'd like to take a look."
Mm-hmm. And don't be shocked if they're afraid to take it, if they're concerned that they're abuser might find it, but let them look through it, and even if they don't take it with them in that moment, just say, "Here, can you just look through it real quickly?" And maybe they do take it, maybe they don't. It's a great resource to be able to have access to.
That's the only one I would add, I think.
One last thing that I will say is that because I forgot to say it earlier, oftentimes, especially if kids are involved, if it's like a divorce type situation or an abuse leading to a divorce situation, this may take years to navigate. And so whether that's your situation or a situation that you're helping with, just know that. It's going to be a long haul. And, you know, if there's a split custody situation, some of these things may drag out in the courts until the kids are adults, effectively. So I say that not to try to make things sound more daunting than they are, but just to know that up front. These are years-long situations oftentimes.
And that reminded me of something. Thank you for saying that. Another way to be involved, even if you or someone you love, if nobody you love or yourself is in a situation that might be abusive, the foster care system in our county and in our state is in dire need of families and individuals to take in kids. The state of Minnesota will do everything in their power to keep kids and to keep families together, to keep kids with their parents or with a close relative. But sometimes that's just not safe. And there are kids who are waiting for foster care, for safe places to be. And we have families in our church who have taken in foster care kids and in one case adopted some children and are providing a loving, safe home for them. But if that's not, if the long-term forever isn't something you feel called to, you know, pray about the possibility of doing respite care or foster care too, and that would be really helpful.
And sometimes that respite care is just a night or a weekend in some cases.
To give mom and dad a break enough to regroup and then receive the kids back. So that's another kind of side door thing, but I think it's relevant.
Well, thank you, Pastor Shar, for joining us. Like we said at the beginning, this is a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
There's a lot more depth that we could go into, but neither of us are experts right. on this area.
This is
area.
True.
We just wanted to at least open the conversation so that you have some ideas of where to start, whether mm-hmm. it's you that's going through something or someone that you care about. So just please know that you're not alone.
Right.
Whatever you may be experiencing or watching a friend or loved one experience, this is not the first time that this happened. Humanity has been broken for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and that is not good, but it means that there are things to lean on. There are people to lean on. Mm-hmm. There are resources available to you. There is hope. There are things that you can do. So mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of my final word. Any final words from Pastor Shar?
Nope.
Right. Well, thank you for watching or listening. Again, if you have any questions, my email is listed. I'm also going to put those text and hotline number that Shar shared with us in the episode notes as well, so that you have easy access to that mm-hmm. for yourself or for someone else. So if you think that this is an episode that would help someone, maybe this is one of those resources that you can point people towards, just so that they can listen to this conversation and go, oh, maybe I do see some of my story happening in this conversation. So we just hope that this is a resource to begin some of these conversations. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. thank you for watching or for listening. Have a wonderful and blessed day.
Bye.